Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 122. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd, who normally likes to take most of the summers off during the offseason, is Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Friday. Boy, it feels like we haven't done one of these shows in a month.
And if it wasn't for something that happened this morning, nothing would have changed over the last week of no podcast. So good to have you back, though, Dave.
Yeah, I appreciate it. No place like home, as the old saying goes. I'm stoked to be back in Las Vegas. All things considered, you know, the trip, I guess, was okay to Florida. Got to see my dad. You know, everything that goes along with that. Got to eat at Waffle House a couple times. That's always kind of a treat. They don't have these out here in Las Vegas yet, and if any listeners have ever eaten in a Waffle House, I hope you think it's a treat as much as I do. Regardless, I am back in the fold, and I did get back on you know, late Tuesday night. So, you know, as you started off there, really not a lot has happened, and that's really a good sign in the grand scheme of things. However, something did happen this morning being Friday morning, and it's worth talking about on the big picture view of it. It doesn't seem to be a big deal, but anytime a player is arrested, it's something that needs to be discussed, and that indeed happened to cornerback Artie Burns in Miami Thursday night. Early reports state that he was charged with driving with a suspended license, according to the Miami Herald, and that early reports indicate that his SUV was initially stopped when police noticed that it had an expired license plate tag on it, and then the cornerback was placed in handcuffs after it was determined that his license was suspended. Other reports indicate that Burns reportedly has failed to pay over $1,000 in traffic tickets, according to court records. So, yeah, that'll probably get you put in handcuffs and get your picture taken at the police station.
And it did. So we'll have to reset the workplace. 0 days since last arrest counter. We had a good streak going this offseason, though, Dave, and obviously not news you want to wake up hearing about, but I suppose if this is the biggest story of the offseason or biggest incident, then you come out okay, and of all the things to get arrested for, this, I guess, is relatively minor. But, hire a driver, Uber, Lyft, get a friend. Come on, these guys got to be a little smarter.
Yeah, they do have to be a little smarter. And, boy, when you saw that mugshot on David Avalle or Avell, his Twitter feed, first thing, before you even get down to the description, you're thinking, oh Lord, DUI or something like that. So it doesn't appear to be anything drug or alcohol related. So as far as I can tell, that is good news. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you know, he's not going to miss any time, due to a suspension or anything like that. Going to be a gigantic slap on the wrist. He's obviously going to have to get those fines paid. We'll see how it affects his driver's license moving forward. But yeah, Artie, come on, son.
The thing that was most concerning for me was some of, at least the one specific ticket that he got in the report that said he went reportedly at least 130 miles an hour in a 60. First of all, I don't care what the speed limit is. 130 miles an hour. You're going to get yourself killed. That's you got to slow it down out there.
Yeah, I mean, outside of maybe you, who of us hasn't done that? Of course,
I have. My McLumina cannot go 130. I promise you that.
That's what I was going to say. Your McLumina won't even go. Look, I've owned some hot rods in my day. 69 Mustang Mach 1 with a 351 Cleveland in it. So you can bet your sweet bottom dollar that I was going to see how far I could push that thing. But look, this kind of stuff's forgivable. I mean, face it, he's still young, a young kid per se, and you're going to make mistakes. Hopefully he learned a very, very valuable lesson this time around. And anytime you get these tickets or your tags been expired and stuff like that, get it taken care of. So it gave us something to talk about this morning. I doubt we'll have to talk about it much more after today.
Right. And while it is a problem, something that Burns has to address and correct, I tweeted out a little bit before we started the podcast, people quickly forgot about Antoine Blake's arrest in 2015 for his public drunkenness. So stuff that will be very much forgettable once the season starts around.
Yeah, that's a great point. And boy, timing sometimes on the site can be everything. I think it was almost an hour that report about Artie Burns went up after Matthew had written up the stock watch on Artie Burns. Matthew obviously determined that Artie Burns' stock is up. Maybe that should be stockade up.
I put a little editor's note at the bottom that just says, oops. So, sorry.
Absolutely. Look, Artie had a great, basically... as a whole, a great rookie season. Became the starter about midway through. Obviously had his lumps, took his lumps along the way with some coverage issues. And, we've talked quite a bit about the crack and replace and things like that. But there's no reason to think that Artie Burns' stock isn't up right now heading into the second season. And I don't think any of this, this arrest or off-the-field issue is going to, hinder any of that whatsoever. Okay. Now, something else that probably needs to be discussed, and it was a little bit surprising to hear the news a few days ago that former Baltimore Ravens inside linebacker Zach Orr has decided to resume his career after deciding back in January that he's going to walk away from the game due to kind of a spine neck issue. He apparently got got another opinion or two or three from doctors that basically determined that he's really at no great risk of being paralyzed or anything like that should he continue playing, and it looks as though he's going to do that. Now, the Ravens thought he was retired and retired for good, and they did not issue him a restricted tender during the offseason. They also did not place him on the reserve retired list. So basically right now, Zach Orr is a unrestricted street free agent, free to sign with anybody. I don't know, Alex, the more I got to thinking about this, I'm thinking, well, did he just kind of circumvent the system there?
I don't know. I know you've been away, but I feel like you followed it more closely than I have. What changed? Is it a different doctor? Was it the same doctor that says, we reviewed your medical situation and we feel like there's not a risk? I'm just trying to figure out what has changed over the course of 3 or 4 months that his medical is now good enough for him to play.
Yeah, I think at first it was just one doctor, and he took that doctor's advice, and then he was, former Baylor quarterback, evidently pointed him in a different direction to talk to. And, best I can tell, he's gotten two or three, other opinions or more since then. And, they basically determined that he's not in any more risk than he was in the past, I guess, I'm obviously no doctor, and this would be great where we would have Melanie on or something like that. So I don't want to overstep my pay grade of blogger. From the looks of things, here's what I would expect though. I think somebody's going to sign him. I think, these teams will obviously want to bring him in for a physical, but I wouldn't be surprised if teams asked him to sign a waiver. Go back and look, and boy, the Ravens can talk firsthand about recent recent waiver experience because they obviously made tight end Dennis Pitta sign one. So these kind of things would prevent them from having to pay out any type of injury guarantee benefits after the fact. Now, obviously, if you signed a player for let's say a 1 year contract for however many, and he gets injured during the season, you place him on IR. Those kind of things are kind of unavoidable as far as having to pay those kind of things. But future years and of course injury benefits and those kind of things can be avoided by getting players to sign an injury waiver. And I would kind of expect that to be the situation with Zach Orr. And I still go back to wondering, Zach would have been a restricted free agent, right?
You said so. I don't remember a situation.
Yeah, I believe that would be the case with him. So he would be looking at maybe a, I don't know, what kind of tender would you think he would have gotten? I mean, a former undrafted free agent. There's no way in hell the Ravens would have placed just a low level right of first refusal tender on him. So you would have think it would have been a second round tender. It's a hell of a gamble if you're gonna take the injury route and claim you're gonna retire and then all of a sudden decide to come back after the deadline to get tendered is passed and all like that just to avoid a 1 year second round tender in hopes of maybe getting a better deal. So we'll see. Like I said, I think a team's gonna sign him. Now the first report was five, six, seven, eight teams had interest in him, and now that I think that report's grown to 16 teams. Now, this is a guy that only has one full year really as a starter, and that was last year. And boy, what a great season that was! I mean, in my opinion, Zach Orr in just one season became one of the best young inside linebackers in the league. And I guess the question becomes, and I wrote this up the other day. Should the Steelers have some sort of interest in Zach Orr?
Oh, man, that is such a heavy question, Dave. A couple things. One, I'm very confident that he sincerely retired not to try to game the system or anything like that, and I'm sure that you agree with that. And then he just new information came up. He got second and third opinions. Two, I saw the reports about 16 teams, and he has taken visits. He was in Detroit. I think he's going to the Jets, I believe, next. And there is clearly interest. I'm sure some of those reports are very much agent-driven about the high level of interest right away in Zach Orr. Three, to your question, that's such a difficult question to answer. It's all about that medical. What does that say? And it's going to be, the team doctors are driving this signing. One team, their doctors might say, we're not confident with this guy. We're worried about this risk. And so the team's going to shy away. Another team's doctors could say, we think he's going to be okay. The medical looks good. Go ahead and take a chance. And then that team is obviously going to be show interest. So it's just obviously, there's a potential need at inside linebacker. I don't think a move's going to happen, but it's all about that medical, and none of us can speak to that.
Odds in history tell us that no way in hell does Orr sign with the Steelers. And on top of it, you would think with kind of his price tag, and let's even assume he signs an injury waiver, he's going to get offered more than the minimum. So in order for the Steelers to kind of compete in that, and what they would probably like to do regardless is to sign him to a two-year deal or something like that along those lines, so they can keep that first year cap charge relatively low. All signs point immediately after this story broke about him wanting to come back, it's easy to speculate that it's not going to be in Pittsburgh. But I gotta admit that my mind. And it doesn't normally in these situations when either player's released or coming back or something like that. It's got to really kind of be a special player for me to even think and start fielding questions that will the Steelers sign this player or that player. And he is the one that, look, I would not be mad at all if they showed interest and ultimately signed him, assuming the medicals and all were okay. Because let's face it, this is a good young inside linebacker that you know, based on how he played last year, would look absolutely great playing alongside Ryan Shazier.
Right, sure. I mean, you know, it'd be hard to for anything to be mad at the signing, but I have to say, Dave, we've been down this road before with free agents or, you know, trade guys that with medical issues, and the team doctors have not always had a good track record. You think of Ladarius Green, Brandon Boykin, so maybe it's just better to steer clear.
Yeah, they're medical, kind of a joke. I don't know if you remember what was that show that was set in Vegas with those Vegas cops and the hijinks just recently, Vegas 911 or something like that. You know, they kind of a spoof of a cop show. I remember one instance where they were putting this guy through a DUI test and making him stand on one leg and hop and you know, kind of a outlandish DUI. Test, you know, I kind of envisioned the Steelers medical staff putting players through that. Now, look, it's easy to crack, and I've said this several times in the past too. You know, I don't think the Steelers medical staff is any worse than any others around the league, and I don't think the Steelers rush players, you know, back to the field too soon. Now, did they not look, you know, look deeper into the history of Ladarius Green? I mean, how could you not know this guy had the concussion issues that they had? I think it was just a risk reward thing with Ladarius Green. Obviously, concussions research is still a lot needs to be found out about, you know, those kind of things, and I think they kind of rolled the dice with him. And they crapped out, per se. And look, Ladarius Green is still unemployed, you know, as we get into close to training camp time here. So, the Steelers have made mistakes with medical evaluations in the past. I doubt that that's the last time that will happen. And, you know, when you're talking about a guy like Zach Orr, obviously you don't want a lot of guaranteed money tied up in it, but you know, if you could get him for, you know, 2 years for, let's say, an average yearly salary, including signing bonus of around $2.5 million, you know, that's a lot cheaper than what you paid for a guy like Ladarius Green. But it goes without saying that it would be interesting to see him in a Steelers uniform playing alongside one Ryan Shazier.
Right. Yeah. I'm not. Do you know if? You probably I don't know if you know. Was he more of a Mac linebacker? I think he played.
He was more of a weak Mac side. He was more of a weak
yeah,
side.
Yeah, because Mosley there was kind of their buck, I think. So, you know, and I think in terms of depth, because I believe the Steelers are high on Tyler Medikevich. So he's your backup buck linebacker. But, you know, who's your backup Mac? I mean, LJ Fort, I think, but, you know, we don't know exactly, you know, his status making the team. He's on the outside looking in. So Steven Johnson, I guess. And so you could see the upgrade in the specific location, inside linebacker, not just the position as a whole.
Yeah, and the thing you would have to ask yourself is can a guy like Orr play more of the strong side, or would you be willing to, you know, move Shazier over to that, you know, over to the strong side and let Orr play the weak side? But, you know, Shazier is so good at being able to slice backside, you know, if you will. And all really as, you know, or two, you know, if you think about it. So you got really two guys that kind of are great at playing one position, you know, playing the weak side, you know, Mac position, if you will. So it would present a challenge kind of moving forward in that aspect. Now, the Steelers obviously appear set to move forward with Vince Williams, but you know, they did, you know, it's important to remember that they did seriously go after Dante Hightower, and, you know, how happy is happy, you know, are they with Vince Williams? I know you're a bit higher on Vince Williams than I am as we enter training camp situations here. So it's still, you know, all things, you know, closing the book on Orr in this discussion now. It would be surprising if the Steelers had any more than passing interest with Orr.
Agreed, and I don't think they can give him the opportunity other teams can. Detroit, the Jets, they can give him immediate playtime in Pittsburgh. I wouldn't want to move Shazier or Vince Williams, to be honest with you. I want to keep the starters as they are. So or at best would be some sort of rotational guy with Vince Williams and probably more of a backup, a special teamer. And I'm guessing that other teams are going to offer more than that, and that Orr would not be particularly interested in that role. So I'm going to say he signs with the Jets, or at least someone with a starting opportunity.
Yeah, and the funny thing about the Jets, and people probably say, well, Dave, why are you okay with the Steelers kicking the tires on Orr and not a guy like David Harris? Well, I mean, you're talking – look, David Harris was a fantastic player in this league for years, but, you know, it gets into a situation – I mean, he's over 30, commanding a lot of money. In my opinion, he's more of a two-down linebacker, if you will, at this point. I mean, you just got rid of – you just let a guy leave town in Lawrence Timmons, who's virtually the same kind of linebacker. So it makes no sense to let one guy like that go and replace him with another almost an identical kind of player in Harris. Now, with Orr, he's a lot more athletic linebacker than Harris or Timmons at this point of his career. You could see situations where Orr being kind of a nickel backer type role, but on top of that, you're not going to pay a guy $3, $4 million, even $2.5 million a season to play a limited snap basis. And at this point anyway, how much would you expect Orr to play on special teams on top of it? Now, obviously, if you're signing him, you're signing him because you don't think he has any medical limitations, and thus you have no issues with him running down there, covering kicks, and getting involved in those car crashes, if you will. Mm-hmm. So, look, it's fun to think about. I wouldn't mind seeing Orr in a Steelers uniform, but in the grand scheme of things, when you boil it all down, I will be absolutely shocked if it happens. So from there, we move on. Look, I just don't want him to land back in a Ravens uniform.
All right. Absolutely.
We kind of spoke a little bit about Vince Williams there, and I kind of want to maybe move in a direction that might end up including him in the conversation. Now, anytime you mention the word Pro Football Focus, either in a post or on a podcast, you get about half the people that wrinkle their nose up, and maybe another quarter that raise their eyebrows, and then another quarter that don't raise anything. They're that controversial with the stuff and their grades and all like that. But as far as analytics go, and I've said it time and time again, I like looking at their stuff, especially when it's hard, cold facts like, snaps played and times targeted and stuff that can easily be tracked, that there's not so much football IQ or having to discern what a player's job was or wasn't. I think they do a good job in charting a lot of stuff, and a lot of stuff we chart the same way, right, Alex? I mean, we chart formations, we chart who lines up where in the box. A lot of the things that PFF charts, we chart as well too. Now, the good thing about what PFF does is they chart those things and 31 other teams. So then we have a comparison tool at that point across the league. Now, PFF wrote in a recent insider article for ESPN, they ranked every NFL roster as they stand right now, and when it got to the Pittsburgh Steelers and their own metric system, they had the Steelers ranked fifth overall. Now, that's not the area that I want to focus on in that report, because look, we can look at this thing, 18 different ways and objectively and subjectively determine that maybe the Steelers have, maybe the top ranked roster to the 10th best roster. So that's not where I really wanted to go with this, even though I think fifth best is about right.
Yep,
if you will. I thought the more interesting aspect was who they named as the best player on the roster and worst player on the roster. And I want to get the best player on the roster out of the way. They tabbed running back Le'Veon Bell as the team's best starter in 2017. And I found that a little bit surprising. I mean, I can understand a little bit of the argument. He's arguably the best all-around running back in the league, but You go back to the aspect of just how fungible is the running back position in the NFL. I think I would have named Antonio Brown as the team's best starter entering the 2017 season.
Well, it's certainly a good problem to have, something that no other team has with the best wide receiver and best running back in the league. And, of course, you can make an argument for Ben Roethlisberger as well. You know, I haven't thought about it too much, to be honest. I'm just happy both are in Steelers uniforms. I just off my gut kind of right now, I think I would give the edge to Bell, because you're right that the position is sort of fungible and the line is good and, you know, people can make those kind of arguments. But the volume of snaps that Bell plays is something that no other back in the league comes close to, and I don't think any other back in the league could do. I mean, there's been times where he plays 90% of the snaps, and that he's basically done that for the last, you know, 3 years whenever he's been in the game and on the field. And I think that's the thing that I look at in just kind of almost disbelief every time I think about it, because it's something that most running backs should not be able to do for how involved he is as a receiver, as a blocker, and as a runner, a guy that's touching the ball so often and is still able to be in such great conditioning that you never see that drop off with him. You never see any hint that he's tired. And AB is similar, but I think obviously running back's a more physically demanding position. And to see that, I think maybe makes me feel like I want to give the edge to Bell over AB.
And obviously Bell does, you know, if things go as planned in any given game, he's going to touch the football probably at least twice the amount of times that Antonio Brown's going to touch it, and maybe even as much as three or four times more, you know, depending on how many passes he catches out of the backfield and how, you know, how many late in the game runs he's given. And, you know, obviously, you know, a wide receiver, any wide receiver, if he catches double-digit passes in a game, it's he's had a busy day there. Now, it goes without saying, now, if you don't have Ben Roethlisberger on the field, the chances of this team making the playoffs, let alone winning the Super Bowl, diminish incredibly, astronomically. So I think that kind of goes without saying that Ben is a very, very, very important
asset. That's a value question, though.
Right. Now, when it comes to the Bell Brown argument, you know, I wonder, you know, which team, you know, which loss would hurt more. And personally, I think you can piecemeal together a running back situation better than you can piecemeal together kind of, you know, a wide receiver situation. That's why I personally would look, Brown can make some game-changing play. Hey, and here's one other knock. I'd be more apt to, and look, somehow this is going to get spun into Dave doesn't like Le'Veon Bell, doesn't think Bell should be signed to a long-term deal, trade Bell, all like that. That's not what I'm getting at here. But, you know, Bell does have his knocks a little bit, and one of those has always been, kind of in a little bit of an astounding thing for me is, where are the explosive runs with Le'Veon Bell? And I'm not just talking 20-yard either. I'm talking, where are the ones that go more than 10 yards? Right. You know, if there's one thing that you would like to see Bell improve on, would be the runs of 10 yards or more. We all know he can get 5 yards in a cloud of dust on almost any carry, and you're going to win a lot of ball games if you do that every time you touch the ball. But, you know, I would like to see him, you know, add a little bit more explosive play element to him. Not many. You know, I'm talking 4 or 5 explosive plays, 6 plays during the season would be, I mean, those can change some ball games in a heartbeat. We've seen it in the past when you use the talk stat and everything that goes along with that. All right, look, I mean, 6-1, half a dozen of the other when it comes to you know, best starter for the Steelers offense entering the 2017 season. Now's when I think we can have a little bit of an argument. PFF. I definitely don't agree with how they wrote this up, but not only did they say the Steelers' pass rush was, you know, is their weakest element of maybe their defense, which I, you know, you'd be hard pressed, I think, to find many people to argue with that, you know, outside of some people saying coverage, you know, man coverage or whatnot. But here's what they said. The Steelers keep trying to find a new stud pass rusher and successor to James Harrison at outside linebacker. Bud Dupree has been the latest swing and miss. He only has 41 total pressures over his first two seasons in the league. Look, Bud Dupree has not lit the NFL on fire as a pass rusher, you know, since he was drafted. But you know, let's hold off on this on the latest swing and the miss categorization right there, and to go even farther. You know, they tapped him as the Steelers' worst starter entering 2017. Yeah, I'm gonna have to draw the line there.
You're right. I mean, you can argue that Dupree's the worst starter. I would disagree, but if you're gonna make that argument, if PFF wants to, in their metric based way of looking at it, fine. But you get that little hacky, you know, misleading comment when it says over during his first two seasons, which implies he's played every single game. Well, the guy missed more than the first half of last year, and it took him several games to get back into the swing of things, and I don't think that's mentioned in that comment, so that's a misleading way to represent what he's done his first two seasons.
Yeah, and if you're, let's say you're an, you know, let's say even if you're a blogger for another team and you're doing your blogging job correctly, which I don't know how you tell.
The blogger's code. You got to consult
the,
it.
The blogger's handbook. You know, you're following your team religiously and you know trends and all like that. And look, you're paying attention to them, you know, statistically and reading Football Outsiders and Pro Football Focus and stuff like that. You're still probably not going to know a lot about, you know, as much as you should about another team. And when you let's per se, you're an outsider and you read this, I mean, there's no real context there, you know, about Bud Dupree. And if there's one thing that Pro Football Focus lacks a lot of, it's context at time. Mm-hmm. And I even wrote this up when I wrote about what PFF had to say about this, and it's the fact that, and you just hit on it. I mean, he missed over half the season last year due to him needing a sports hernia repaired, and you know, while Dupree has already played in 23 of a possible 32 regular season games since he was drafted, he's only started 9 of those, and you can get into semantics. Okay, well, he didn't start, but he played the lion's share of the snaps in those games. Okay, credit to those that want to argue that. But here's the fact of the matter. He's only played a total of 878 possible over 2,000 regular season defensive snaps. And in short, he's played just 40.8% of all defensive snaps over the course of the last 2 years. Now, how many of those 878 defensive snaps were pass rushing snaps? Right. I think around probably 500 or so.
Mm-hmm. How many pressures did PFF say he had? 41? Is that what you said?
41.
So do the math, 500 divided by 41, that's a pressure every 12 passes. Doesn't
right.
sound too bad.
Right, which isn't awful by any stretch. And look, even when you look at how many total sacks does Bud Dupree have you know, so far during his career. Now, albeit I can asterisk, is it asterisk or asteriskus?
Again, consult the blogger's handbook.
We need Matthew Marksey for that. He's our English major when it comes to that. But what I'm getting at is you know, going off memory alone, I can asterisk quite a few of those as being, you know, gimme sacks. But I mean, in total, he has 8.5 and over the course of the last 2 years. And if you just look at that 8.5 raw number alone, based on the amount of snaps that he's played so far, which hasn't even been a full season, you know, not bad if you're looking at it from a fantasy aspect.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, as a defensive coordinator, pressures are pressure, sacks are sacks, get them however you can get them. And I think if you do the math and extrapolate what he did in the second half of last year, when he had 4.5 sacks, you know, he gets to about 12 sacks for the entire season had he played a 16-game year. So, you know, I have high hopes about Dupree, and I understand that part of, you know, my optimism with him is a projection. But, you know, I wrote about it the other day, and I got a tiny bit of blowback from it, which I can understand. I was kind of strong in what I said, but I think he's been the hardest working Steeler this offseason because, you know, in March he was with Chuck Smith. Then he went down to Georgia with Shazier and Steven Johnson to work with an agility trainer. And then I think he took maybe the weekend off or not even, then went back to working with Chuck Smith, who we know is one of the best pass rushing coaches that you can go to. So this guy's putting in major work this offseason. He knows how important this year three is for him, and I bet he's as frustrated as anybody that he has not had the success, partly because of injury, of course, that he's expected and wanted to have. And I think he's going to blow up this year, Dave, and have a 12 or so sack season.
And boy, wouldn't that be a welcome sight, right? Because the last time we've had an outside linebacker or any Steelers defensive player register double-digit sacks was in 2010 when both James Harrison and Lamar Woodley did it. This guy, I mean, if you want one to circle one player where we need to see, you know, a huge move forward in not only technique and playing style, but in production, it's Bud Dupree. And I think, you know, if you kind of do extrapolate out what he's done so far during regular season play, and you look at kind of the other factors and what he's done this offseason, and if we assume that he wasn't even fully healthy, it took him several games to maybe get even fully healthy last year after he did return. Of course, have all the offseason now and working with the pass rusher. There's optimism to think that we could see 10.5 to 12 sacks this year out of Bud Dupree.
Absolutely. And I, again, like I said, I think he can definitely do it with all the work he's putting in. And again, to work with Chuck Smith so closely this offseason, a guy that's helped out many a pass rusher, have a lot of optimism. You know, he's going to get to play a lot more. There might not even be much of a rotation with him this year. They're obviously going to do a rotation on the right side, but Dupree may end up playing a lot on the left unless, you know, Chicolo has a really good camp and shows that he's worthy of getting in there a good bit of the time. So, you know, the PFF angle of lack of pressures, you know, it's flawed because of lack of games. It's flawed because Dupree was involved in the rotation, so you have less opportunity to do so. When you put those things in context, as I think you and I have done here, you know, you end up seeing that number looks a whole lot better than the way they present it.
I agree. Now, what happens if he doesn't take that step forward? Let's say he plays in all 16 games and plays 830 snaps. That sounds about right? 830 mm-hmm. snaps, you know, assuming he stays healthy. And let's say, look, you know, so many times it's easy to look at that final sack number and judge it all by like that. But I mean, let's say the pressures and the total sacks aren't there, and not only that, the quality of sacks aren't there. Look, I can live with a player only having 8 sacks instead of 12 if those 8 sacks are him just, I mean, high quality whooping ass kind of sacks there, because I mean the other sacks, a lot of times those low quality ones are coming who was the one closest to the ball after 4.5 seconds after the snap was made. Right. Now obviously you have to put yourself in the right spot, so you know, I don't want to diminish all sacks there. And snacks. I'm hungry. I'm going to eat me some wings today. I've been thinking about that all morning. You know, what happens if he doesn't? If this isn't the jump year, how concerned are you at that point?
Pretty concerned. It'd be a huge disappointment and a big letdown. Obviously, we'd have to see exactly what happened, you know, why that didn't happen. Was it bad luck? Did he drop into coverage more? Was there heavier rotation, injuries? I mean, all the caveats that anybody could give you. But, you know, everybody in that room, in that locker room, every Steeler fan knows how big of a year it is for Dupree. And if he doesn't produce, then sure, it's going to be an issue, because as the team has talked about, you know, time and time again, how important it is to get home with 4. And if Dupree's not that guy, then that probably means the Steelers didn't do a good job overall getting home with 4, which is going to cause big, big problems for this defense.
All right, if Bud Dupree is not the weakest defensive player on the 2017 roster, who is?
That is the better question. I had answered it in a mailbag I did yesterday. I went still with Artie Burns, and I am optimistic about Artie Burns. I believe he clearly is going to improve this year, and I'm excited to see that. But he was by far the most inconsistent player, and I think some of those inconsistencies are still going to exist in year two. You know, he is a year older, a year wiser, but that does not mean he's not going to have his problems. And I think if you see all the highs and lows that he had last year, that's going to take some time to smooth out. So I went with Burns.
And you know which way I'm going.
Vince Williams?
Look, I hope to hell.
Killing me.
I hope to hell your optimism is justified, you know, this year. And even so, I mean, I think it's easy to think that Vince Williams is not going to play 1,000 snaps. You know, hopefully the Steelers find a way to get a different kind of nickel or dime defender on the field quite a bit this year. You know,
mm-hmm. I think that's the point, though. Vince Williams will thrive in the role the Steelers put him in.
Right, and I hope you're right. Right. But I mean, he's been very inconsistent in limited playing time so far.
You think? I think he's been consistent. Against the run, he's been highly consistent. Right. I think his coverage is better than people give him credit for.
Now, a lot of his snaps, a lot of his meaningful snaps, you have to go way back to his rookie year.
There's enough of a sample size what he's done the last 2 years.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is a lot of those snaps weren't you know, his rookie year snaps weren't great.
Right. But throw those out the window. I mean, he was a round rookie. Larry Foote gets hurt week one. He's in there. You know, it was a mess.
Well, you know, the biggest aspect with him will be him, you know, how he's able to function in the passing game. I'm not so, even though there were some things that happened, you know, especially last year, I think in that game against the Dolphins, that make you kind of grimace a little bit, play against a run. You know, I think the biggest thing is what's going to happen on downs where he is on the field and teams try to exploit the middle of the field in passing game situations. So, mm-hmm. Can he be a competent, you know, two down linebacker? Well, I guess suppose it you know, we got to get away from saying 2-3 down linebacker, right? Because 2 down linebacker would indicate that you're really mostly only playing against a run, and in today's NFL teams, a lot of teams will pass and run pass mm-hmm. on first and second down regardless of the situation. So you know, it's great to be able to throw that designation on players. Oh, he's just a 2 down player. But what happens if teams throw on those downs, you know, in instead? So look, I hope to hell that he is and can give quality snaps in those situations. I understand your reasoning behind Artie Burns, and I think it'd be interesting poll to ask our listeners and maybe one to throw up in the Friday Night Five questions is who is the weakest, you know, defensive player entering into 2017 to see what kind of reaction we would get. Now, who would be the weakest offensive player?
Jesse James, probably.
Yeah.
Who else is going to choose? I mean, it's not a lot of options. A slot guy, you know, Juju or Eli.
Yeah, and you know, the first name that would pop in my head would be Alejandro Villanueva. But I mean, boy, give me that group of starting five any day of the week. You know,
yeah.
Right now, Jesse's block, you know, we talked about it. Jesse's blocking has improved, but I mean, look, he's got to give you more on third downs, in my opinion. He's got to give you a little bit more yards after the catch. He's got to be more than just Cadillac Matt Spaeth, if you will.
it's a good way to put it. I like that.
You know, and that, in my opinion, is where he is right now. He is a Cadillac Matt Spaeth. In several instances. So yeah, I think it would be able to get away with naming Jesse James there. All right, what else do we got in this? The Steelers have many miles to go before they sleep during the 2017 season, Alex, but a lot of those miles will not be spent in the air, according to Delta Airlines. The Steelers will fly the least amount of air miles in 2017, 6,790 to be exact, and with their longest trip being the week 16 game against the Houston Texans, that trip will account for roughly 33% of all their air miles flown during the 2017 season. Now, let me ask you this. Does this mean Does this amount to a hill of beans?
Didn't they have the least miles like last year? Wasn't that this past year? I mean, they were one of the least. We'd have
yeah,
to look it up.
I don't remember. I mean, look, this is not a stat that I memorize from year to year. And look, I mean, if you want to, if that's true and you want to use it as a barometer, I'm all for it. Obviously, I think it's better when you don't have to take trips, several trips out to the West Coast. And when the Steelers specifically over the years, those trips out to California have not usually gone well. So in the grand scheme of things, yeah, I'm all for not having to spend a lot of time in the air. And I do think that game against Houston is somehow, some way, I think that game against Houston is going to be huge. Either settling the, either playing a big part in settling the AFC North, which we obviously hope is long locked up by then, mm-hmm. or playing a huge, huge part in potential home field advantage throughout the playoffs there. So it's fun to look at. I'm glad they're not going to be in the air a bunch, but I don't know if there's any statistical correlation to flying less, you know,
right,
getting you to the Super Bowl.
Right, and the causation, although you could argue some of it, it might not hold up. But two things to that. One, you know, your headline was miles to go before they sleep. So Robert Frost, well done, Dave. I think that's the big story here.
And I wouldn't know that unless I Googled it, because I want to credit Mike Tomlin for that.
Oh, okay. Is that Tomlin saying
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's a Tomlin quoting Robert Frost several years ago. I think was it 2009 after the Ravens game was the first time that that Tomlin dropped that quote. So, my lack of English history would have me crediting Tomlin before I would Robert Frost. So there you go.
I was trying to give you credit. Now I got to take it away. Now I feel bad. And two, I'm glad they don't have many miles to fly, because I never heard about their updated plane situation. Remember, they lost their airline? Was it Delta that they lost, or American Airlines or something, their contract with them? So I now imagine every flight will be from Major League, where they just get the old like propeller plane rolling up on the runway. That's my thought of how they'll be flying this year.
Yeah, I had to fly one another. We call them puddle jumpers, but it's a jet. It only has like 28 or 29 rows in it. I forget exactly how many, and three across, two on one side, one on the other side. Probably you flew on something that size when you flew to Mobile for the mm-hmm. Senior Bowl. Well, lucky for me, the flight out of Pensacola to Houston on the way back was, well, you want to talk about not being full at all. I mean, that thing was about empty. And second, I sat in the last row in the rear of the plane in the single seat. Now, the bad side you'd say is that thing was next to the lavatory, but the plane was so empty, there wasn't very many people running back and forth to the lavatory. So I think that played a big part in me avoiding the airplane flu on the way home there. So, yeah, as far as the Steelers charter goes, it was American that decided, I think it was six teams that they decided they weren't going to continue to contract with. So I don't think I've heard yet who's going to be the team's charter. What's the major hub up there? Is United fly up through there? You know, I know Delta hubbed out of
Southwest. I think they all kind of come up in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see who has to fly the team around.
Should do a Steelers Depot charter this year, Dave. Let's get him a plane.
Yeah, that cost us a little bit higher than our budget, because you got to remember, I just renewed Matthew Marksy's contract, and I think yours is coming up first of August, too. So luckily, I just had to put a first-round tender on you, because I don't think you're going to be unrestricted until 2018.
I'm thinking about retiring with a spinal issue, and then I'm going to game the system and get back in, Dave. Take it exactly. Route.
Yeah, you take that route. I'll give you a spinal condition to worry about.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, what else do we have? I got a study. You know, some things you write about, you think are going to get more comments than the other ones. This was one of those cases where I didn't get a lot of comments, probably because a lot of people already knew the answer to it. But I looked historically back at the amount of times the Killer Bees, Ben Brown, Belt and Bryant have all been on the field together. And boy, Alex, I mean, yeah, you can go back to the game against the Cincinnati Bengals week 8 of the 2015 season was the last and the only game that season that the Killer Bees were on the field for. And even so, they Bell went down in that game with the knee injury, so we don't have a lot of snaps to look at. You really got to go back to 2014, Bryant's rookie season, to find, you know, a large selection of games that the Killer Bees played together. And a lot of people forget that. For, you know, Bryant didn't see the field until roughly the halfway point of the season at all, because, you know, I think he had a minor injury at the time, and then of course the playbook probably wasn't absorbing that too well. That game, that his inaugural NFL debut was against the Texans, and boy, what a memorable one that was. And then of course he played the remainder of the season, but even so, the Killer Bees weren't on the field all, you know, for every snap at that point. So what's disgusting to kind of think about is that we've had three seasons now in total, and the Killer Bees have basically played the equivalent of one quarter of a season.
Yeah, that blows my mind, Dave. I can't believe that. I mean, I can and I can't believe that.
You know, let's hope we get good, you know, all these guys and keep them on the field in 2017. And boy, I'd hate to look back at these last three, four, what we hope will be 3, 4, 5 years at least of having Bell, Bryant, Ben, and Brown all on the field together, and look back and say, man, why the hell didn't that? You know, why the hell didn't any of those teams win a Super Bowl? Because, I mean, the talent offensively, I mean, I'm not breaking, you know, this is brilliant analysis on my part. You know, just the talent is amazing. And when you look at the quality of this offensive line now, and you think about, man, this defense, just as long as they're not any worse than what they were at, you know, during the final half of the season last year, that should be the motto. Just don't be worse than the second half of the last year when it comes to the defense. If that happens and the offense stays healthy, I mean, there's no reason to think why this team shouldn't compete for the Super Bowl.
Right. I think that's a good way to frame it, Dave. And I don't know if we want to veer into this topic, but I think it was Greg Rosenthal of NFL.com had written the other day that he believes the Steelers have a title-worthy defense. And I tend to agree with him. It's still unproven, and it's more projection than it's been past execution, but I think they've continued to make strides. And if you project, you know, Dupree's development and Artie Burns and Sean Davis and, you know, what TJ Watt's going to be able to offer, I am, you know, maybe homerish, maybe I'm being naive, but I'm optimistic about the jump the Steelers defense will make this year.
And I know people talk, I haven't brought it up in a while because it's the offseason, but people know I love that adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat. And we saw that thing make huge, that number makes huge strides during the second half of the season. Now, obviously, you get into the playoffs, that game against Tom Brady, that was just, I mean, that was, that, you know, that was a crap the bed situation there. And it showed you all the different ways that this Steelers defense wasn't as good as what maybe that second half of the season number was. But, you know, you have TJ Watt in there now. You have, you know, your secondary another year in there now. You have Cameron Hayward back. There's a lot of reasons to believe that you're going to get a more consistent play out of your defense. You can bet your butt I'm going to be tracking that adjusted net per passing attempt stat, you know, because look, that stat, you know, that takes in sacks, turnovers, you know, all the key statistical elements against the pass it takes into account. And if that thing starts off high, especially when you consider the teams that the Steelers open the season with, you know, against the Browns, against the Vikings, against the Bears, I mean, we ought to be looking at a top 10 team in that statistical category through the first three games, and you know, look, say what you will about Baltimore, I don't think their offense is as good as you know. I if it's better than last year's Ravens offense, it's not going to be by much. And then you get into the Jacksonville Jaguars by the coming out of that fifth game of the season, and say what you will about Kansas City and that offense. I've never been a huge Alex Smith fan, and I think the Steelers can even beat that 2017 team on the road this year in week six, assuming, you know, stay healthy and all like that. I guess what I'm saying is, when we're looking at some of these statistical categories with the Steelers coming out of the first six games of the season, this team damn sure better be no worse than 4-2, and they ought to be a top 10 team. If not, something, in my opinion, has gone horribly wrong, and it's probably gone horribly wrong on the defensive side of football.
Yeah, no, well said across the board. Expectations should be high. This team has the health and the improvement of the young guys taking the next year to be better than last year. And, you know, in a broad way to look at it, that's the best way to describe this team.
All right, what else do we have here? Nobody's been arrested since we've been on on this podcast, so that's good. I like your blast from the past with Brian St. Pierre. And look, guys, please realize that we're doing our best to get you stuff up to read this time of year. And there's only 4 weeks left, thank God, and then training camp will be getting underway. So you're going to have to suffer through the blast from the past articles and these contract look backs of Kent Graham and the likes. And Alex, I think if you read that, maybe even you'd learned a thing or two about Kent Graham and that.
I did read it. I liked it. Yesterday was a historic day for Steelers Depot. Kent Graham and Brian St. Pierre sighting on the same day. It was wonderful. Oh, Kent Graham, I remember how awful he was. I was young, but it's etched in my memory that Kent Graham was just abysmal.
The thing that I remember, I think, the most about the Kent Graham era 1 year was the fact that during his, you know, he stuck with the team after his first season and on into training camp and preseason the following year. And I was actually at that first preseason game in 2001 when the Steelers traveled to the Georgia Dome to play the Atlanta Falcons. Me and my buddy, you know, Chris, who unfortunately passed away, you know, not even 2 years after that due to colon cancer. We knew he was sick at the time, and it was a big deal for me to drive up. He lived in Athens, Georgia at the time, for us to meet, I think, halfway in Atlanta and go to that game at the Georgia Dome. And oh, yeah, by the way, that was the NFL debut of one Mike Vick as well, too. Chris Chandler started that game. I can't remember. I think Vick came in second. I can't remember if Zaire or somebody else played in that game. But Vick was the huge draw, and you can imagine how packed that Georgia Dome was for that alone. Now, Cordell Stewart, I think if memory serves me, started that game. Kent Graham, I think, relieved him and threw all like 11 pounds. The Steelers offense was absolutely abysmal, but thankfully the Falcons' offense wasn't much better. I think T. Martin drove the team down for the go-ahead score. I think was it fourth quarter or late third quarter, and that ended up standing, and the Steelers ended up winning that game. I think by 17-16 or something along those lines there. So that's my brush with Kent Graham. Actually got to see him play in a Steelers uniform, and thankfully it didn't last into the 2001 season because he was cut. The Steelers had already had Tommy. The buzz at that time was, oh, the Steelers got Tommy Maddox, you know, on the roster at that time. And then obviously he ended up, they ended up parting ways with Graham before the start of the 2001 season. And Maddox was, of course, the backup there. And Cordell was the starter there. So I have a lot of unfortunate memories about Kent Graham there. And I believe you wrote about the all underrated team quarterback with the Steelers today, so we won't give that away. We'll tease that enough to hopefully get people to read that as well. Alex, you and I will be back probably on Monday to move forward this. And yes, folks, if you are interested, we're starting. I think any given time now, Alex will start putting the fundraising GoFundMe account up for anybody that wants to donate to the cause to send Alex to training camp. We do this every year and have since Alex has been with the site. He's going regardless, but it wouldn't be nice to have a little bit of money to help defer all the costs associated with that. So, you know, we'll start looking forward a little bit harder to training camp in some future Terrible Podcast episodes there. So once again, if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can do so at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Cazor at Alex_Cazor. If you'd like to email the show, please do so at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to just make an outright donation, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button upper right navigational bar. Alex, have a great weekend. Thanks for being with me today. And as always, thank you everyone for listening to this episode of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.